Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Election season is in full lather. We've got attack ads, editorials, rallies, bloggers, pundits of all stripes, and right in the middle of everything, comedians.
You wouldn't say you'd run this time as a pragmatist. You would not. It wouldn't be, yes, we can, given certain conditions.
No, I think what I would say is, yeah. Yes, we can, but it is not... But yeah. It's not going to happen overnight.
The president's on Comedy Central. Comedians are marching on Washington. This hour on Point, American political humor over time and right now. You can join the conversation. Is this for laughs? Is it serious? Both. Does the satire keep us honest, keep us cynical? And what political humor whacks your funny bone these days? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook, at On Point Radio. Joining me from Newark, Delaware, is Dana Young, professor of communications at the University of Delaware. She studies political humor and the rise of late-night comedy's political throwaway. Dana Young, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much.
From Chicago, Scott Stantis is here, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, the laughing libertarian. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Chuckles Beatty. Hello, Jack.
Stop me if I've told you that one.
We'll stop you. We've got a lot to look at here, but let's stay right here with Comedy Central and the president with Jon Stewart last night. I want to get your reaction to this. Here's a little bit more of it. President Obama talked about the public's frustration with Washington, what Americans expect from their leaders, and Stewart responded.
I think that they're hoping that we can do a little bit better here in Washington than we've been doing.
You ran on very high rhetoric, hope and change. And the Democrats this year seem to be running on, please, baby, one more chance. Now,
the president and then the left. Here it is again. Obama talking about, then in comes the comedian.
We've got 9 months of consecutive private sector job growth. Mm-hmm. We have passed historic health care reform, historic financial regulatory reform. We have done things that some folks don't even know about.
What have you done
kids
that we don't know about?
Well,
are you planning a surprise party for us? Filled with jobs and health care.
And never mind, heck of a job, Brownie. Here's Stewart with President Obama.
Larry Summers did a heck of a job trying to figure out how to.
You don't want to use that phrase, dude.
Scott Stantis, you're the editorial cartoonist, but there's the president of the United States just days before a giant election, and I'm sure he's in your cartoons, but he's right there on Comedy Central. What'd you think of that interaction, Scott?
How weird is this? I mean, seriously, when polls now show that a majority of especially younger people get their news from Comedy Central and other comedians. I mean, really? It's just mind-boggling. I thought, it was a fine performance. It was an interesting, obviously historic in its way event he wants to go after the basic cable viewer, which is awesome from Comedy Central. But overall, I mean, governance is serious. And I think one of the complaints about this administration has been that the communication has been lacking. And it certainly didn't get any better last night. The other perception is that humor somehow is the truth, and sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. It all comes from some kind of filter. So it's a very peculiar time. Not unusual, but peculiar.
Dana Young, what do you think? Peculiar or just another way of talking to the American people?
I would actually disagree with some of those comments, just because I feel like, first of all, where we're at right now in a multi-channel era, this is not weird. And actually, if you look at the dialogue between Stewart and Obama, there were a lot of substantive policy points discussed that you might actually not hear Obama talk about outside of sound bites in a traditional news broadcast. And I think where we find ourselves now with Stewart and Colbert, the notion that your sort of soft entertainment political late night shows give softball questions and kind of let the politician get off easy talking about family or their pets or what they did this weekend. That's not what they're doing here. And it might have some levity to it, but if you actually look, there's a real dialogue that's taking place, and Obama does not go He's not able to just sort of railroad the conversation. Stewart challenges him on some of these points.
Jack Beatty, there's a lot of laughter right there. And yes, there's definitely comedy. But at heart, Jon Stewart is asking this president if he's abandoned. Yes, we can. It's not a joke.
No, it's not a joke. And the president wasn't taking many jokes. He didn't seem to find much of it funny. There was that case and another where the audience was laughing, Stewart was laughing, and the president was grim-faced. And I think that's indicative of a problem he has. There isn't much, or I'm sure there are examples, but there's not much self-deprecating humor from the president, and that is so important in a president. President Reagan, I think, was a master of it. I mean, when he was running for the nomination, he said at one point, you know, wage and price controls have been a failure since the time of Diocletian. And then he paused. I'm one of the few persons old enough to remember that. Well, that was a way of diffusing the age issue. John Kennedy, when he was running for president, of course, his father was putting out all kinds of money on the campaign trail. And I think before the West Virginia primary, Kennedy read out a telegram, "Dear Jack, don't buy a vote more than necessary. I'll be damned if I'm going to pay for a landslide." Well, again, that's exactly, I think that's sort of showing you're your own comedian. You can take a joke and you can make yourself the butt of a joke. I think the president hasn't shown that ability.
We're going to look at a lot of political humor over time in this hour and bring it right up to date, see where we are now. Let's go back. You mentioned JFK. Let's go back to 1962. Here's comedian Vaughn Meader. He often impersonated John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the president, 1962. Here he is making a self-referential joke about this on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Now, you see, ladies and gentlemen, there is someone going around this country impersonating me. I didn't mind around the New England area. I didn't mind around the Washington, D.C. area, but now it's gone just a little bit too far. It wouldn't be so bad if this were just another guy. This is not just another guy. This fellow is also an entertainer. He's doing my act. He's doing my gestures. And he's using my lines. Do not ask what this country can do for you. That's one of my original lines.
Never mind Sarah Palin and Tina Fey Scott. I mean, JFK, I didn't mind when it was just around the New England area. That's pretty good. Presidents having comedians sort of running away with them for a long time now, Scott.
It has been going on for a long time. I mean, in my circles, editorial cartooning, you've had Thomas Nast, of course, and even great cartoonists prior to that in the 18th and even 17th century, starting in England. Here's the question I have, and I'm not wholly qualified to answer this, but it just seems to me that there's always been political humor. We've always kind of liked to kick the big guy. You know, that's Doug Marlette who said his job is to look around the room, look at the biggest guy, walk over and kick him in the shins. But over time, you know, guys like my age, of a certain age, grew up with Mad Magazine, Saturday Night Live. We kind of grew up on that taste. But I would argue that since, I would say, maybe a decade ago with Jay Leno using political humor almost exclusively is fairly new. That political humor is really at the top of the pyramid rather than just subsidiary to
people
our
making
humor.
Jokes about, you know, wife jokes or husband jokes or I don't know,
right,
you know,
exactly.
Fell in the outhouse jokes, but White House jokes.
Exactly.
What about it, Dana? Where do you see the arc of political humor going over time and its place within the world of humor?
Right, right. There's a wonderful sort of chronology of events by Jeff Boehm from Cronkite to Colbert, where he speaks about this as sort of a cause and effect situation where because of changes in how media ownership was regulated and because of changes in terms of the lack of a separation between entertainment and politics, both at the level of the news organization and in terms of what people started to consider to be relevant sources of political information, you end up with all these sort of diverse genres. So instead of just thinking, okay, it's time for my daily dose of news, so I will turn on, you know, one of the big three networks, people have a lot more nuanced view of where they can receive information. And I think that comedians sort of respond to that shift.
Responding to the shift because they're going to go and get it in all kinds of places. What about the throw weight of political humor, Jack, these days versus, you know, pick your point in American history?
Well, you know, we have a medium that gives it such ubiquity, and now with YouTube and the like, it's immediately on
Jib
the web.
Jab and everything else, and right, every high joke is there right there, and you can go and see it the next morning if you didn't catch it last night.
But even so, in the past, I think Will Rogers got a lot of play. I mean, he was in newspapers, he was on the radio. And when you listen to that, I can't remember lines offhand, but just from recordings and from James Whitmore's impersonation, there was a warmth to it and a jollity and a good humor. And I'm not sure that that's as present in some of this, Stewart and Colbert. You know, there is they're both clearly liberal and they're both often mocking. You know, they're making fun of the stupidity or the seeming stupidity or blundering often of Republican candidates. And the result is that the wit, which should be bipartisan and of the belly, universal, seems partisan. And even as you're laughing at it, you're feeling, well, this isn't very fair. And I've heard people say that one of the, you know, they have some, Democrats have said, they had some reservations about this weekend's extravaganza because will this be a lot of making fun of people who, you know, went to Glenn Beck's rally? And is that a good thing for Democrats to be seeming to do?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about political humor as the president goes on Comedy Central and comedians march on Washington. What it tells us about our politicians, our politics, and ourselves. With Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Dana Young, professor at the University of Delaware. She's all over late-night comedy from that perch. And our own Jack Beatty. It's been going on for a long time. Here are the Smothers Brothers in 1967 on their television show singing the Draft Dodger Rag. They pioneered the edgy political comedy in that format. Here they are channeling a message to Democratic President Lyndon Johnson and his Defense Secretary Robert McNamara on the Vietnam War.
Now, Ho Chi Minh sure ain't no friend that's playing for all to see.
And I know someone's got a fight over there, but why does it have to be me?
So I wish you well, Sarge. Give him heck. I'm bound for Canada, you know.
And if you ever get a war without blood and gore, boy, I'll be the first to go. But until then, Mr. McNamara.
Smothers Brothers, 1967, having fun with what wasn't so fun, the Vietnam War. And there's more, and there's more. Here's comedian Mort Saul doing stand-up in the 70s, archived here in a BBC documentary.
Nixon is the kind of a guy who, if you were drowning 20 feet from shore, would throw you a 15-foot rope. And then Kissinger would go on television and would say that the president had met you more than halfway. That's what I meant.
You gotta love it. And here's one more. Johnny Carson playing a very confused Ronald Reagan in this 1982 skit from his TV show. His Secretary of State, James Baker, is trying to brief Reagan in the skit.
The first name of the head of the PLO, that Arafat guy.
Yes, sir.
I said I'll need the first name of the head of the PLO.
Yes, sir.
Jim, it's nice of you to be polite, but, what is his name?
No, sir. Yasser.
Well, now, I ask you what is the first name of the head of the PLO, and you tell me no, sir.
That's right.
Then you tell me yes, sir.
Absolutely. You got it.
I got what?
Johnny Carson on Ronald Reagan. Now, Jack Beatty, I'm thinking that has to be seen as a kind of a transitional bit of humor right there. I mean, that's the old who's on first joke, but
yes.
It's aimed straight at the president of the United States.
Yes, and it's a joke that he, as I said earlier, he told those sorts of stories on himself all the time. And, you know, in his second debate in 1984 with Walter Mondale, he helped to really turn, sort of efface the effects of his rather disastrous first debate by saying, I won't hold my opponent's relative youth against him. It wasn't so much funny as saying, I'm aware that I didn't do too well on that last debate, and many people think it's because of my age. Well, I'll put a lantern, as Tip O'Neill used to advise, put a lantern on your troubles. Don't hide them, because everyone else is going to see them. Get there first, put the lantern on it, and make light of it.
Put a lantern on your troubles. Let's hear from our listeners. Jared in Staunton, Virginia. Jared, you're on the air. What do you think? Hi, Jared. Are you there? Well, let's go to Dave in Middletown, Connecticut. Dave, you're on the air.
Well, how's everybody today?
Pretty good. What do you see?
Great.
Well, these comedians, Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, they're funny, but they're dead serious. They are looking to diminish the standing of the politician or candidate or office holder by holding them up for public ridicule. I'm surprised that it's not more effective. Sarah Palin had lived to see another day, although it probably impacted the election. She's lived to see another day and had the audacity, and as Christine O'Donnell will probably do, have the audacity to come back. It amazes me that people are able to continue to have public life after, you know, being held up in that way. I find particularly, though, the attraction to by the left-leaning comics to be, to make perfect sense. I mean, there seems to be such low-hanging fruit for them to use as fodder for their routines, especially, for instance, now with a lot of the seemingly outlandish things that are being said by Tea Party candidates who continue to have credibility.
Dave, let me just probe there for a second. Are you happy with this ridicule or not? I can't quite tell from your tone that the comedians bring.
Well, you know, I think there was a show, I wish I could remember, it was in the last election cycle, there was a sort of like the right-wing answer to Stewart and Colbert, and it just wasn't very funny. It didn't last very long. I think it ran on Fox for a little while. I can't remember what the name
was. Half-hour news hour or something, yeah.
Yeah, and so, yes, as a person who kind of leans that way myself, I find the humorous approach... I love the rapier wit, you know, as a way of disarming an opponent, because once you've got your audience laughing, as for instance, Christine O'Donnell made her own laugh with her recent audience when she was addressing the First Amendment separation of church and state issue. The audience itself laughed. She was providing her own
Yeah, I'm not sure that was an intentional laugh line, but let us look at it. You raise a good point there, Dave. I mean, Dana, here we are. We just heard, you know, comedians going right at JFK, going right at LBJ Democrats, but then also Nixon, Reagan.
Yep.
What about political humor now? Does it have a left or right center of gravity now?
Well, I want to take on one other piece that your caller brought up that's really important, which is sort of where I approach this subject from, which is how humor is processed in the brain and how that impacts on how we judge the object of the joke. So there is something kind of magical about political humor, as has been known for decades. I mean, hundreds of years ago, satirists were considered quasi-magicians because their power was so presumed to be so, but it wasn't understood how it worked. Well, actually, it works because we're so busy entertaining something in the realm of play that we apply different rules to it when we deconstruct it.
Okay.
So we might not necessarily go at it and say, is this fair? Is this just? Where's your evidence? Because it's not considered under the same rules.
But Dave was kind of suggesting that we're actually open to insights once we get laughing, once we get into that realm, that we might not be open to otherwise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's where the power of humor is, and if only just to enable us as listeners to highlight things about a politician or a policy that we might otherwise just dismiss out of hand if it were presented seriously, because we'd have our guard up and we'd say, you know what, this is a partisan statement, I'm not listening. Especially today, when self-selection and partisan media is the norm.
Scott, how about it? I mean, you're an editorial cartoonist. You use humor to tell truths, we hope, all the time, but do you see American political humor today as a realm of honesty or not?
Of course. Well, I mean, honesty, subjective, and,
honesty,
humor
subjective.
As, It is.
Yeah.
As Freud said, when you start deconstructing a joke, it ceases to be a joke. And I think that's talking right now.
Nothing I study is funny.
But Dave also talks about things like low-lying fruit. I'm sorry, here on the right, we have Joe Biden who is a gaffe machine. We've got you've got everything from Barney Frank to Nancy Pelosi. I mean, that's a godsend. I think the problem for comedians today who do tend to come from the political left is that there are so few targets. It's very much what the right was faced with after the 2000 elections when the Republicans controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House. So you see these people going after someone like O'Donnell, who's clearly not going to be the next senator from Delaware, and other people like Bonner. I mean, would you really care about the minority leader of the House? The fact is they bring up his tan all the time because there's not a whole lot of high-ranking Republicans right now. Right. So, so it's not just a matter of going after the hanging fruit. And Dave said that he does come from the left, so he finds this humorous. I think it also depends on whose ox is being gored here. Mm-hmm. There's always a victim in humor. The construct of humor is that there's almost always a victim of some kind. And I think what the president, as Jack pointed out last night, what you saw last night was if I slip on a banana peel, that's a tragedy. It hurt. But if someone else does, it's flippant hilarious. So, and that's what you saw last night with the president getting very terse and not self-deprecating, which was a mistake, by the way.
Jack, I'm reading here from the Washington Times, conservative newspaper out of Washington. This is a very recent article, saying the conservative comedy world is still seeking its Tina Fey. Yeah. They say, so where are the GOP comedy all-stars? It does seem loaded to the left at this point in our history, Jack, or am I wrong?
I think you're right. And, that at least goes against one of the sort of cliches that I can remember prevailing right up into the 60s, which was that liberals were self-serious and, they were
dour
and righteous and that wit and satire was on the right. It was in the writers, Evelyn Waugh, William F. Buckley Jr., that wit was
kind of sparkle, devil may care.
Exactly, that it was on that side because what they were taking on was the moral pretensions of liberals. We are out to save the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're out to make life better. Well, what a target. And there was that sort of self-seriousness, and I think P.J. O'Rourke is a sort of in that lineage of, but that I think has waned, and now, I mean I suppose some people think Rush Limbaugh is funny. I haven't heard enough of him to know, but at least the stuff I see quoted around isn't so much funny as kind of rugged and sometimes brutal. It doesn't seem to be wit.
He ran a lot of those the sort of magic Negro stuff before the election season.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Puff the Magic Dragon. Maybe that's humor of a stripe. Let's hear more. I mean, we just can't hear too much of this just to kind of have it in our ears. Here's Dana Carvey as George Bush, the senior, Saturday Night Live, 1991. The country's preparing for the Gulf War. Here's Dana Carvey.
Tonight, our Jewish friends observe the fifth night of Hanukkah, the celebration of a military victory won centuries ago in a part of the world where today 400,000 brave Americans await my order to annihilate Iraq. And none of us want war in that whole area out over there. But as Commander-in-Chief, I am ever cognizant of my authority to launch a full-scale orgy of death there on the desert sand.
The moral ambiguity is right in the spotlight, the way Dana Carvey handles it. What's going on there, Danny Young? Why do we love that he's talking about an orgy of death in the desert sand? It's hilarious.
Colbert was at an interview at Harvard a few years back, and somebody said, why does it seem that comedy is inherently liberal? And Colbert, of all people, had this wonderful, articulate response about how humor is about status shifts, and humor is about change, and humor is about deconstructing the existing sort of social order, and that is an inherently liberal task. And when you look at personalities and ideologies and how they appreciate different kinds of humor. The kinds of humor that's appreciated by liberals is very different from that appreciated by conservatives. And this goes back to some psychological work from the 80s and 90s.
What's the difference? What do you mean?
One of the differences is about people's intolerance for ambiguity or their need for cognitive closure, which is kind of fancy terms for just meaning you need things to be tied up and wrapped up and put in a box, so to speak. And some studies have found that those kinds of jokes, like puns and wordplay and wit and punchline-oriented jokes, are more appreciated by the right, whereas irony and things that are left kind of turned upside down but never resolved are more appreciated by the left.
Scott, do you buy that? Does it leave you feeling square? I don't know.
I was born square, my
okay,
God.
Okay, Chicago
but
man.
I wanted to ask Dana something here. Yeah. I mean, is this still prevalent? Is that still as prevalent today as it was? Because I know a lot of my conservative friends today, as I mentioned earlier, grew up with satire. We saw Saturday Night Live. That really what influenced and informed our humor. Is that for people who are maybe slightly younger, do those standards
sort
still hold
categories?
Yeah,
has everybody been put in the blender?
Right. I'm not sure if that still holds today. I think that there is something, though, about sort of the philosophy or the underpinnings of those ideologies that make not just the target of humor appreciated differently, but the structure of the humorous text, the joke or the sort of parody segment, or as it were. And I think it's not just about whether or not it's a Republican or a Democrat who's at the butt of the joke.
Let's listen to a little bit of Republican meets Colbert, then we'll hear Obama meets Saturday Night Live. But here's from March 2007, and here's Stephen Colbert reviews a then-recent debate between Republican presidential candidates. And here's Colbert mocking Mitt Romney's euphemism for torture. You'll hear a bit of Romney first.
Enhanced interrogation techniques have to be used, not torture, but enhanced interrogation techniques. Yes.
Good point. I'm sorry. Yes, Nation, when I said torture, what I meant to say was enhanced interrogation techniques. Nothing to worry about. It's no big deal. It's just like upgrading to HDTV. You're going to have to do it eventually.
And we're talking torture. Here's a little Saturday Night Live skit from October 2009. Fred Armisen pokes fun at all that President Obama had not accomplished.
There are those on the right who are angry. They think that I'm turning this great country into something that resembles the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany. But that's just not the case. Because when you look at my record, it's very clear what I've done so far. And that is nothing. Nada. Almost 1 year and nothing to show for it.
Jack, that is not kid gloves with this Democratic president, I must say.
No, and Jay Leno, I think, had one of the best jokes in that vein. And I think it's one that President Obama, it's the kind of thing he should tell on himself. He said, you know, it's hard to believe President Obama has now been in office for a year. Isn't that amazing? It's a year. And, you know, it's incredible. He took something that was in terrible, terrible shape and brought it back from the brink of disaster, the Republican Party. he should tell that sort of story on himself. I was saying earlier, talking about how it used to be that Witt was on the right. Well, I think what's happened was there was an upper class quality to that. You know, it was making fun of earnestness and it was making fun of moral, appeal.
Yearning.
And moralism and so on. And I think what's happened now is the upper class quality of it has passed to the liberals in the form of, you know, I'm smarter than you, which is what I get out of John Stewart. That I'm just smarter than all these people. And, you know, that's just that. And I'm laughing at them because, not because they're wrong, but because they're silly or stupid. And so I think there has been that migration from class to, you know, college educated and smarter than you. That's not a good territory, I think, for Democrats, the party of the people, so-called, supposedly, to be in.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about political humor. Here's Tina Fey and Amy Poehler in the 2008 elections portraying the vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton at Saturday Night Live.
Hillary and I don't agree on everything.
Anything.
believe that diplomacy should be the cornerstone of any foreign policy.
And I can see Russia from my house.
And here's a jab from the right. June 2009, Senator Barbara Boxer, the Democrat, of course, in California, asked Army Brigadier General Michael Walsh in hearings to address her as Senator, not ma'am, in those hearings. "It's just a thing," she said. "I worked so hard to get that title." David Zucker, director of the comedy Airplane, spoofed the incident in this short political film where Boxer's request turns the hearing into a circus.
Order! Order, please!
Excuse me, officer.
Captain. Police captain. And I worked so hard for... Miss Fleming!
Judge Fleming, I worked so hard. Hello, Red Cloud.
Chief Red Cloud, I worked so hard. Take many scalps.
Hasn't Senator Boxer worked hard enough? Maybe it's time to give her a rest.
Okay, there's a poke from the right. Dana Young is with us from the University of Delaware, Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune, and Jack Beatty. Mark's calling from Niagara Falls, New York. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi. To me, the elephant or the donkey in the room is that this particular kind of political humor, like The Daily Show, is they are right there, present. I mean, I've read Swift, Twain, Mencken, but they weren't there when they were being written about. But I'm old enough to remember Roland and Martin's Laughing, if you remember
that. Sure, yep.
And former President Nixon went on there. But he didn't talk about anything politically substantial. He just said, "Sock it to me." And just, I think we are evolving, but I don't know where it's going exactly. But I sort of like the way it is evolving. I don't think we're there yet, though. I'll just listen to your response off the air.
I appreciate your call, Mark. Thanks a lot. I mean, that is funny, Jack. You know, Swift, Jonathan Swift, didn't have the I don't know, was it the king, the prime minister? It was the Laugh-In had Nixon himself saying, "Sock it to me," right on air.
I remember
playing
that.
In.
You know, and that did more good for him than, I mean, because mm-hmm. talk about somebody who seemed so self-serious. And I remember he got a lot of good publicity out of that. That's so important that the man who, or woman, let's hope in the future, who wears the crown takes it off occasionally and says, you know, I sweat just like the rest of you. And I'm, you know, I have my foibles, too. And it really, I mean, LBJ, you know, his grandiosity was real and he would make fun of it by telling stories about it. And I think that's, I keep repeating it, but it's awfully, the lines are just so good. Chancellor, he told this story about himself. He said, Chancellor Erhard of Germany said to him, "Mr. President, were you born in a log cabin?" And Johnson said, no, Mr. Chancellor, I wasn't born in a log cabin. You're thinking of Lincoln. I was born in a manger." You know, there's a real truth in that. He was so grandiose, but you see, he was also showing, I understand that I am.
Jack, take us even further back. I mean, in the era of Lincoln himself, you mentioned Lincoln, there was plenty of humor going on.
Plenty of humor going on. And Lincoln's favorite humorist, strangely enough, or so he said, was someone called Petroleum Nasby. That's what the man wrote under, the name he wrote under. And he was a Northern Democrat who wrote these sort of dialect stories. And Lincoln said that he just, you know, it was like, I think he said something like, "This is almost like the voice of God to me. I have to have my fill of it." Which was odd because a lot of what he, what Nasby took on was Republican righteousness on the slavery issue, and Republican hypocrisy on race, and as a wholly un. Nasby wasn't uncomfortable about his own racism at all. And it makes reading these things very difficult because they're full of slave dialect and the like. But Lincoln fed, he had to have his daily or his weekly dose of Nasby, which was making fun of him and of Republicans.
Let's bring it right up to date. Here's conservative humorist Dennis Miller out in Nevada earlier in October, supporting Tea Party favorite there, Sharon Angle. Here's Miller on Fox talking about her opponent, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid.
On April 19th, 2007, Harry Reid achieved bonehead emeritus status in my eyes when he said the war is lost when we've got kids on the ground in a conflagration. He's been up on the Hill since they had lattice work on the Capitol Dome, and he's more pockets than dryer lint. Every time he opens his mouth, I shake my head so rapidly you could blend paint colors in my mouth.
There's the funny from the right. Here's Jon Stewart coming back to your territory, Dana Young, making fun of Delaware Senate candidate Christine O'Donnell's witch ad.
I am not a centaur. Your turn.
I'm not a witch. I'm nothing you've heard. I'm you.
You're me? Because I don't recall the last time I had to deny I was a witch. That's Christine O'Donnell, the Republican candidate for senator in Delaware. She's currently about 16 points down in the polls, probably because she exhibits the type of judgment that has her denying she is a witch while standing in front of what appears to be steam from a bubbling cauldron.
Jack, is it just me? I mean, that seems funny. Dennis Miller's funny in a way, but you talked earlier about the sort of righteous anger on the left. There's a kind of righteous grinding anger in that little bit of kind of funny Dennis Miller stuff on Harry Reid.
Yeah, I mean, it's more angry than satirical. I mean, it sort of goes. I mean, he clearly has contempt for Reid, and I think it's that's a problem for comedy. I mean, you can't have people should be butts of jokes; they shouldn't be piñatas, you know. And you can hear the contempt just roiling there. And in a way, it sounds like the righteousness now is on the right. I mean, I can't even make a good joke out of this guy. I have such contempt for him.
Let's go to Rick in Iowa City. Rick, you're on the air.
Thank you. I think one of the things that's been missing so far is the blend of humor and technology. When Jon Stewart can show Boehner 10 years ago laying out his plan for the Republican Party and then a split screen, show him doing it a couple of weeks ago, and it's word for word. And it's just the entire use of video that really helps out. As for not attacking Democrats, as I told your screener, he's constantly goring, pardon the expression, Joe Biden. And it's the hypocrisy that he exposes, and not only just with politicians, but he attacks the press quite often, too.
Yeah, Joe Biden gets plenty of attention. You're right. I mean, Craig Ferguson, I think it was when he had the Late Late Show there, and President Obama was coming in, Craig Ferguson saying, a dignified African-American man, what the hell can I do with that? And he concluded his only hope was Joe Biden. Danny Young, what do you say?
Well, what's interesting to me about the caller's comment is that it really highlights a piece of this that he's right has been missing, which is that there is so much media satire that comes out of these shows. The fact that Stewart is able to have he talks about how he has these poor interns that live in the dungeon in the basement who watch hours and hours of cable news shows, and they cull all this footage and then they try to find trends and patterns to try to reveal those moments.
And I envy him having that. He's got the money. And, you know, the base on which to have that, that's fantastic, those back-to-back tapes.
Part of Stewart's argument, though, is I think, implicitly, is why are we the ones doing this? You know, he would never ask that.
Yeah.
They have fun with it. They use it. But there is an assertion there that is someone else is supposed to be
Where's
the watchdog.
Where's the news
media?
Not me. Where's the press?
Exactly. So I think the crux of what he's been doing lately since Obama took office is more media satire. And when you talk about a righteousness, you know, look at the Sir Rick Sanchez scandal and how that went down. There was a sort of righteousness to that. So I'll let your other guests take it from
Scott,
there.
when you see Jon Stewart sort of playing politicians, Democratic and Republican, playing their tape back to back, pointing out their conflicts or hypocrisy, does it look loaded to you, or does it look like they'll go after anybody who's talking out of both sides of their mouth?
Well, obviously hypocrisy is important to point out, but I would probably make the point that they're clearly coming from the left, or at least, you know, favoring that side of the spectrum. And so did that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess so. though, I mean, if that's what the tape shows, I don't know.
Well, I think a really great point you and Dana point out is that where is the news media in all this? And you are absolutely right. What's curious and what's hilarious, and when you watch Onion News Network, which I think is hilarious, and that truly is, that I think is very much much more bipartisan harassment than the Daily Show. And they, what they make fun of best is the media and the fact that there have been such huge, deep cuts in all across the board in media. And what they're trying to cover that up with is the pomposity, you know, the over-the-top graphics and the voices like and talking to you very seriously. I think the more salient point is why in the world is the Daily Show doing what the mainstream media should be doing?
And why do people go there for boldness or for telling it like it is? Isn't that supposed to be the job of the press itself, Luke?
It is, but I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you're going to—it's an easy thing to swallow if it's humorous. It's entertainment, which of course it is first and foremost. You know, do you want to do that?
Yeah, but you shouldn't have the press kind of sitting on its hands too much while comics pick up maybe the heart of the matter. I want to get one more call. Luke Queechy, Vermont. You're on the air, Luke.
Sure. Hi. I'd like to speak to that. I think that what a lot of young voters and viewers are responding to is the perceived media manipulation by politicians in that, like, on the one hand, you've got, you know, Fox News, which is putting out a purely partisan standpoint. In the middle, you've got the mainstream news outlets, which are still kind of trying to deal with this clunky idea of fairness in a 24-hour news cycle. You know, so people can more or less come out and say anything they want, and then you've got the delay while they, you know, a couple of days, and then they verify that, oh, that politician just said something that didn't mean anything. And what Jon Stewart's doing, you're right, he is doing what the media should be doing. He's kind of the firm hand on the wheel there, saying, well, these things aren't based in reality, or let's look at some of the hypocrisies.
Yeah, Luke, I appreciate your call there. Humor as a kind of a last shield. We've just got a couple minutes. I want to ask about the rallies coming up this weekend. Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, you know, to restore sanity, to the March to Keep Fear Alive. I'm reading David Brooks here, chatting with Gail Collins. David Brooks, conservative, New York Times columnist, says he's pretty sure he'll go out of curiosity and because he's never seen 100,000 Priuses in one place. Which is funny. But he makes the point, Jack, that, you know, this may ultimately be a conservative dynamic that comes out because the constant joking may undermine faith in political action and public sector endeavor. Gail Collins comes back and says, no, you expose corruption and ridicule that, everything's going to be good. But I wonder if there's a corrosive thing that comes in when humor becomes such an important stage for political analysis.
Very interesting. That, in other words, you can't even grant legitimacy to government. It seems so absurd on its face. And I think in some of his colloquy with President Obama last night, Stewart was kind of getting at that. I mean, and Obama said, I can't do it instantly. And Stewart was saying, well, in the campaign, you said you could, or you allowed us to think you could. And he was almost saying, you know, taking these impossible ideals and saying, why didn't you do it in 2 years? And yeah, I mean, you could see it as sort of saying impeaching the president's achievements by saying, you know, you didn't match up here.
We've got more humor to come. Jack Beatty, thanks so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
And Scott Stantis at the Chicago Tribune. Thank you very much, Scott. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Dana Young at the University of Delaware. Thanks for joining us, Dana.
Thanks so much, Tom.
In a moment, we'll have a nice long helping of a soundtrack spoof of President Obama. This is On Point. The latest YouTube sensation is a hot new musical spoof called Obama, a Modern U.S. President. Talk about humor going way back. It's very Gilbert and Sullivan. You'll hear it. We're going to play the whole thing. You can see the video at our website. The spoof's creator, Ronnie Butler, plays the president. He opens talking in the Oval Office to an aide about his poll numbers. Then, watch out.
Well, Mr. President, the numbers say there's a disconnect between the reality of what you've accomplished and the public's perception. The people think you're failing to be the model of modern reform and change that they were promised.
Really? Mm-hmm. I disagree.
I am the very model of a modern U.S. president, a liberal one at first, but now it seems I have a centrist bent, and though my popularity has waned, I am not hesitant to say I've done quite well so far, although I lacked experience. We pulled the country back from cataclysmic economic woes. We're fighting in Afghanistan and focused on our deadly foes. In short, I'm firm about my goals and vow that I shall stick to them. And though I'm black, Joe Biden says I'm clean and quite articulate.
And though he's black, Joe Biden says he's clean and quite articulate. And though he's black, Joe Biden says he's clean and quite articulate.
In spite of special interest, I have pushed through major health reform. The country was an uproar. Who'd have thought it'd cause a major storm? By fighting to give basic health care to each citizen for free, I inadvertently gave rise and reason to the Tea Party. The issue is divisive. I have made a lot of enemies. A congressman lost his control and even said you lie to me. But listen, because the odds are 10-1, it is a certain bet. The only time I lie is when I say I don't smoke cigarettes.
The only time he lies is when he says he's with the cigarettes. The only time he lies is when he says he's with the cigarettes. The job is stressful, so get off his back. He needs a tiny cigarette.
I'm too ambitious. Critics say my expectations are too grand. But if we cannot rise to this occasion, I think no one can. It's tough not pleasing everyone. I'm just a man. I do my job. If Sarah Palin shoots her mouth off one more time, so help me God. The corporate greed, the BP spill, and rising unemployment costs. Extremist right fanatics, immigration, where to put a mosque. And in between, I kiss Michelle and hang out with my daughters, too. I even walk the dog sometimes and clean up stinky doggy poo.
The hardest thing about his job is cleaning up the doggy. He needs the free roll and he's also picking up his doggies. He's got the password for the bomb and gift for big stinky doggy poo.
I hearken unto Lincoln and I still believe in compromise. I just require sanity and reason from the other side. So take my word and don't believe a single thing Fox News has said. I am the very model of a modern U.S. president.
So take his word and don't believe a single thing Fox News has said. He is the very model of a modern U.S. president.
The spoof video, Obama, a modern U.S. president, by Los Angeles writer, actor, and producer Ronnie Butler. You can see it at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, James Ross, Marika Spence, and John Wibby. With help from Mackenzie Knowles Curzon and Jessica Willingham, our senior producer is Karen Schiffman. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.